All right, can everyone hear me? Okay, perfect. Excellent. So welcome to this session on building awesome HTML applications in Blend for Windows 8. My name is Krupa. I'm a program manager on the Visual Studio team working on the Blend components. I've been working on this team now for almost 5 years, so I'm pretty excited to talk about the HTML side of the work that we've been doing for the past year or so. So the agenda is reasonably light. You know, I'm not a big slide fan. I'm more into having Blend do all the talking. So the introduction, it's almost done. And very quickly after that, we'll just get into Hello World, start looking at Blend and just all the features it has for building all these really nice applications. The bulk of the time will be spent in slide 3, which is where I'm going to talk about how to actually build HTML applications in Windows 8, talking about all the features that you can take advantage of to really make your applications shine. And depending on how much time we have available, I will cover designing for devices. I definitely want to leave some time for questions and answers at the end, so I do want to give time for that. And of course, I like to give these talks very informal, so if you have any questions during the talk, just get my attention, and I'll be happy to answer them. Microphones have been provided in the aisles to essentially help me hear better, but if it's just inconvenient, especially not in the Q&A part of it, just shout out and I'll try to translate as best I can. All right, with that, let's get started. So at a very high level, there are really two tools you're going to be using for building your Windows 8 applications. On one hand, you have Blend. On the other hand, you have Visual Studio. And at a high level, if I had to just describe what these two tools do without going into any great detail about what about that functionality, I'd say this. Blend is optimized for visual design tasks. And Visual Studio, it's optimized for coding and debugging. Can you use Blend for writing JavaScript? Absolutely. Can you use Visual Studio for writing your HTML? Question. Oh, sorry. So can you use Visual Studio for writing your HTML and CSS? Sure, but because they're really optimized for that, you might find things to be more enjoyable if you tend to use Blend for visual design and Visual Studio for coding and debugging. And I will show both of those tools in concert as part of my talk so you can evaluate a little bit of this for yourself. So just out of curiosity, how many of you here have used Blend before? All right, almost all of you. And how many of you have used Blend for building HTML applications in Windows 8? All right, just a few of you. Great. Plenty of opportunity for converting the 90% of you who haven't had a chance yet. So as many of you know, Blend has been around for a while. We started off as a visual design tool for building WPF applications, then Silverlight and Windows Phone, and many versions of that in between. And most recently, with the Windows 8 work that's been going on, we now support building applications in XAML for Windows 8 and HTML for Windows 8. And this talk is primarily focused on the HTML side of things. I couldn't get a font larger than that, so it's the largest PowerPoint left before it starts cropping things. So I try to make the HTML larger. And despite me focusing on HTML, doesn't mean that the XAML side does not exist. There are other sessions at this conference where the XAML side is explored in more detail, and I'll recommend those to you later. So nice thing about HTML, when we started the work on this project, about 2 years ago we said, okay, Windows 8 seems to be supporting HTML as a first-class development language, how can we make it possible for someone to be productive in this environment? So we had this great opportunity to take all the knowledge we had in building WPF and Silverlight and Windows Phone tooling and take a step back and say, okay, what can we do to, just like Windows, reimagine the overall experience for building these kinds of applications? And one of the things that we centered around is that we wanted this version of Blend, this flavor of Blend for HTML and CSS, we wanted it to be a professional design tool. And let me explain to you what we meant by that. What we mean by a professional design tool is this. We expect you to know the platform. We expect you to know HTML and CSS. Can you be productive in Blend without knowing HTML and CSS? Absolutely. But knowing it will just make your transition to using the tool that much smoother. And second, we don't abstract away any details. There's been a history of HTML editing tools at Microsoft even where we often didn't quite do the right thing, didn't quite put the markup that you wanted. So we wanted to not trot down that path. So instead, we give you as much detail as you want so you can examine and inspect the markup that we create, and you can modify it, and we will gladly respect that. And here's my favorite part. What I think really provides the most value for Blend is that we allow you to focus on the concepts and not the syntax. The common way of saying it is that we want you to solve the problem in the domain you're in. So if you're doing layout, for example, I think it's probably more productive for you to be doing layout type things as opposed to trying to figure out what the syntax is, what the grid or flexbox commands are and all of that. And those are things that you will see highlighted in my talk as well. So if there are no more questions, I'll have to get into the first part of my demo, which is a Hello World app, you know, the classic Hello World app that all of you have probably seen in many other tools in many other languages. Okay, so I'm going to start Blend. So when you first launch Blend, it has a traditional look to it. I'm going to create a new project. By default, I have the free version of Blend that comes as part of Visual Studio, the Express Queue that allows you to build Windows 8 applications. So you'll see that we allow you to create HTML and XAML applications. For the purpose of this talk, of course, I'm going to be on the HTML side. And we give you some project templates just to help you get started building your applications. You know, you have grid, split, fixed layout, navigation. I'm going to start with a blank application, especially for Hello World. I don't need the functionality that some of these templates provide, but you should check them out if you haven't yet. So let me give this project a name, Hello World 2. Seems appropriate. Okay, so once Blend loads, you know, there's a few things that are very striking immediately about it. First of all, you see that the bulk of the space is taken up by the artboard or the design surface. You know, I use those terms interchangeably. And then you have a large area at the bottom where you can see two code editors. One is the primary code editor that gives you an idea of like the HTML that is currently being modified. And then you have the secondary code editor where the CSS for that element is also displayed in concert, because many times when you're modifying or viewing your content, you want to see the markup and you often want to see the styles that go along with it. And you also have the projects panel, which is, you know, a classic mainstay from every single release of Blend and Visual Studio, which is just a hierarchical view of all the various files and contents that make up your application. And, you know, I'll touch upon some of the other panels along the way, but I think, you know, we have at least a sufficient grounding to get started in making Hello World. So I'm just going to delete the default content that gets provided here. So what I want to do is display some text, display Hello World. In HTML, you have several ways of doing this, but the way I'm going to do it is by using the heading tag, the H1 tag. So what I'm going to do is launch the Assets panel, which is this categorized listing of pretty much all the Windows controls, all the intrinsic elements, as well as all the HTML5 tags that you could possibly imagine using, or at least the ones that are supported currently. So I'm going to search for H1. And once I found it, I'm just going to drag and drop it onto my design surface. And you see, once I've dropped it in there, you can see that you can see H1 being displayed in my markup. And you can also see it being shown in what is called the live DOM, which is a tree view of essentially all the objects that are currently seen by the running application. You know, right now, my application is very simple. So the DOM just shows, you know, like a direct representation of the markup. But one of the things you'll see later on when I'm showing you a more complicated example is that this DOM is actually showing you the running version of all the objects as the application sees it. So all the JavaScript-generated elements, all the things that are done by the runtime will all be shown here for selection and styling and all of that. So, okay, I have my H1 tag here. Let me go ahead and just double-click it and just type in hello, comma, world. Done. So that's very simple. You know, that really takes care of the construction part of the Hello World app, where I just add some HTML, make some changes to it, and you can see it immediately on the design surface and the code editor. The next part really is, you know, it's really hard to talk about, you know, a tool like Blend or even HTML today without talking about styling, without talking about making it look a little bit nicer. And this is where we have a lot of functionality really to make managing and working and editing with styles easier. So first off is a style rules panel. This is a panel that you will be seeing a fair amount. So this panel gives you a view of all the style sheets that are currently being loaded by your document, along with the style rules that are also there. So by default, all the Windows 8 applications you create will have a pointer to uidark.css. This is a read-only file provided by the framework. And what this file does, besides having a really, really large number of style rules, is essentially define the look and feel of almost all the controls, all the elements that you have. So if you want to build an app that mimics a typical Windows 8 application, all that is provided for you. So you can easily just use the styles that are provided by the OS itself. And of course, a lot of times you want to have your own styles, something that you can actually write to, and that's default.css. This style rule is created for you as well, and here you can put your own style rules that define the look of your application, as well as even override some styles that are provided right there. And this file is actually provided as part of your application, the CSS folder. You'll see the default.css exists. Great. So what I'm going to do here, there are many ways of creating style rules in CSS and in Blend. I'm just going to create a style rule by just hitting create a new style rule right here. I'm just going to type in H1 because I want to style my H1 element. And what I want to do is to make my H1 element larger. Currently, it takes up very little space on the screen. You know, it has so much real estate. It's a shame that it's only taking up, you know, at most, like maybe 5% of the screen. So this is where I could use some of your help. So I have the CSS properties panel, which is a categorized listing of all the CSS3 properties that I can set and modify. So I know the font size property under text is the one that specifies how large the text is going to be. So what size should I put here? You know, I want this to take up as much space as possible on the screen. So does anyone just shout out numbers? You know, feel free to go high. You know, go big or go home is, you know, one of our unofficial mottos. 125. Let's try that. All right, you know, we've got to go bigger. 900. Wow, this could crash the program. Okay, I like the enthusiasm on that, but let's just go down just a little bit. Let's say 300 pixels. Sorry, forgot a zero. All right, 340. Okay, this is about right. But, you know, so yeah, this sounds, you know, pretty good. But notice what I did here. I was able to just specify values directly in the visual editing tools we provide, and we automatically added the right markup in their H1 because it's a style rule I'm modifying. And in real time, you got instantaneous feedback about what this actually looks like. You know, one of the things you'll see is that what we're showing in Blend, what we're showing in the design surface, is not a rendering of your application. It's not something that we, you know, guess at the position of. We're actually running your application live on the design surface. You know, the application, as you would see when you hit F5, is the exact same application you're seeing at design time. And so what we're really providing you is as close to editing the running live version of your app as you can probably get. And you'll see more of that highlighted shortly. And the next thing I'm going to do, okay, the text is pretty large. Let's go ahead and make the background of the entire application something different. So what I'm going to do for that is select the body element. And like I mentioned before, in default.css, the body element is something that's automatically created for you. A style rule has always been created for you. It's empty, but it's there. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to style it. And notice in this approach, I selected the element as opposed to the style rule directly. And when you do that, you get some additional functionality that's extremely useful. One of the things about CSS is the final look of an application is often not determined by just one single style rule. It's often this collision of style rules from documents A, B, and C, and then like maybe inline styles, all of that. All of them combine to create the final look that you see. And what we've done is given you what is known as the applied style rules list, which is essentially peeling back the layers of the onion so you can exactly see where this body element is being modified from. You can see it's, you know, it's a big fan in UIDark.css. It's being declared at least, you know, 7 times and being modified, you know, consecutively. But what I want to do is modify it in my own version because I cannot write to the framework provided one. And the order also matters. You know, the highest one has the highest specificity. So I just know that by modifying anything in default.css in the body selector, we'll make sure that whatever change I want will, you know, essentially take. So let's specify a background. And, you know, it's pick a color. Let's make it a blue. Right, blue color. And yeah, so, you know, I was able to specify blue color, and instead of thinking about the color in terms of hex values, we give you a nice visual editor for being able to specify the background directly. So that makes it, you know, gives you greater freedom to think more about color in terms of color as opposed to what the exact hex code is, provided you want to do that. So that's basically hello world. So before I jump to the next topic, you know, are there any questions? Okay, great. Excuse me. All right, let's go to the slides. So, hello world, that's kind of cool, but I'm sure most of you not come here to see how we can do something that could have been done easily 10, 15 years ago, maybe using, you know, I might be dating myself here, but by using some of the free editing tools that came with the browser, like Netscape Composer or Front Page Express, you know, back in the day. Now, what you really want to know is, how can we build HTML applications, especially those kind of applications that work really well in Windows 8? So what I'm going to do is I just looked at these applications and said, let me break them apart in things that I think are kind of representative of applications that are a little bit different from websites, and also what make Windows 8 applications a little bit more different than just your standard web applications. And I'm skewing them a little bit towards what I'm going to be demoing next, so it is by no means an authoritative list of the things that an application definitely has. So let me start with the first one. You know, this is obvious. It's a unique style. You know, it's very easy to see an application designed for Windows 8 from a distance. You know, they have a very distinct look to it. There's a heavy emphasis on typography, bold colors. You know, while the data it might be showing was very depressing. You know, it's going to be raining today and raining tomorrow. But it's just presented so beautifully, so I just can't help but be happy that, you know, it's going to be raining, but it's going to be raining in style. So that is very cool. So, you know, unique style, definitely one of it. Second one, it's a deep integration with Windows. You know, one of the things about all the applications that you will see is that you're still using HTML, using CSS, using JavaScript, the same kind of HTML, CSS, and JavaScript you'll use, you know, when you're doing websites and web development in general. But what makes it different is that you have the ability to really integrate well with the OS. You have the ability to communicate with WinRT APIs. You know, you're using JavaScript, where communicating with like low-level APIs are designated entirely in Windows. You can integrate with the various lifecycle management. So for example, the music app, if you were to just minimize the app or be doing something else, you can still hear music playing in the background. These are things that go beyond just the basic level of functionality you have in HTML5 today, but they take advantage of unique functionality that is, you know, particular just to Windows 8. So you have this really good integration with the OS that sets your applications apart a little bit. Second, single page navigation model. You know, in websites, when you click on a link, your URL changes, your entire page changes, and you have various ways of, you know, maintaining state between them. With applications, and in Windows 8 applications in particular, the goal is really to have one HTML page, and you navigate between apps. You navigate the state of your applications by loading HTML in and out. And a lot of APIs have been provided to help with that. You know, the fragment loading API, for example, which I'll be demoing, is a great example of this. I mean, the Xbox Games app, you know, it looks like, you know, it's very visual, has a lot of links to it, but each and every item that you click on will ultimately load into the same context of the main page that it was loaded from. There's very little changing of the overall application itself. And second, optimize for devices. You know, I believe most of you have Surface, for example. And, you know, as you know, Windows 8 is designed really with, you know, touch in mind, with being able to take advantage of screen orientation, screen resolutions, being able to take advantage of your compass, your accelerometer. A lot of APIs, a lot of functionality has been provided to really make your applications, you know, feel like they genuinely belong on a device that gives you more than just, you know, keyboard and mouse input. You know, a great example of this is the Bing app. And, you know, one of the things I'll try to show with all these examples is that almost all of the apps were written entirely in HTML. So, you know, it's really cool to see that happening. So what I'm going to show you is an application to, you know, in Blend that highlights a lot of these interesting functionality. It's called Pick-a-Flick, and I'm just going to give you a demo of it first. Let me open the project, the final version of it. And this application is reasonably simple. What it does is it allows you to just browse through movies that have been released recently using the Rotten Tomatoes API. So there are two pages, essentially, to this app. There's a first page, which is very simple, just a logo and a picture of a chicken that I can hover over and click on. And when I click it, you'll just see that some data from the web is being returned. And what I'm doing is I'm using an API. I'm using, the like I mentioned, the Rotten Tomatoes API. And the control I'm using is the FlipView control. So I get a lot of functionality to mimic a lot of the Windows 8, you know, look and feel by just putting some data and making it all work. So what I'm going to show you now is how to build this application from scratch using Blend and Visual Studio. So let's get started. So I'm back in Blend, and I'm going to say create new project. Create a blank application. Going to say OK. Right. So what I'm going to do first is, you know, I worked with a designer on this application, so I have some assets that I'm going to just add to my project, mainly images. It's going to go ahead and copy and paste that into my images folder. Okay. So the first thing I'm going to do is, you know, when you saw the application, it definitely had a, you know, it's not dark. It has like a different color to it. So I'm going to go ahead and specify the color that I want. So I have my body element. I'm selecting it. And as you know, the body element automatically it has a style associated with it. It's empty. So I'm going to go ahead and just select it, go to the background property, and just specify the color that I want. And the color is D5BF9A. I have it on a notepad right here. I didn't actually memorize that. So the color is here. Great. So, you know, that's the easy part, getting the background color in. Next up is actually loading the individual pages that actually make up my application. So for that, like I mentioned earlier, it's a single page navigation model. I don't want to change from default to HTML. What I do want is an HTML page whose contents I will be using and placing inside default that HTML. So I'm going to go ahead and create a new item. And we give you a lot of items you can add, and all the item templates that are shared between Visual Studio and Blend. And what I want is an HTML page. And this is a pretty blank page. I'm going to call this homepage.html. And I'm not even kidding when I say that, because if you look at it, there's no CSS reference, there's no JavaScript reference, nothing. It's just basically the bare minimum HTML needed in order to have a valid HTML document. And the reason is that all of that context, all of the styling, is actually being inherited from default.html. So I have homepage.html, and I just want to be able to identify it once it actually gets added to the document. So I'm just going to go ahead and insert a div. And I'm going to give it an ID value. I'm going to call this one homepage container. That's it. So let me go and close this out. And I'm going to go to default.html, open a JavaScript for default.js, and write some code that gets that application in. So I'm just going to go ahead and copy and paste some code that I've written. And just to explain at a high level what I'm doing, I'm essentially using, I'm getting a pointer to the body element using the query selector API, and I'm using the Windows JavaScript fragments API to essentially load homepage.html, and once it has loaded, call handed loaded page, which is currently empty. And so all I really need to do now is actually call this function. So I'm going to start by doing it in Blend. And pay attention to what kind of experience you get when you're writing JavaScript in Blend. So document.add event listener. I mean, as you can tell, it is very basic. Blend is really not, like I mentioned earlier, not optimized for writing code. So I'm just going to stop what I'm doing right here. And I'm going to go with a tool that is actually better suited for this. I'm going to open this exact same project, exact same solution in Visual Studio. The nice thing is we share the exact same solution format, exact same project files, so I can simultaneously be working on my same project in Blend and Visual Studio at the same time. So I'm going to open default.js in Visual Studio, and notice that you'll see all the code that I added in Blend displayed right here. So here I'm just going to go ahead and type in document. Notice that you get IntelliSense, which is fantastic. You get like a tooltip that tells you exactly what you're doing. Initial page, no capture, save, done. So Blend's going to tell me to reload this page, and I reloaded it. You can see it showing up in Blend as well. OK, great. So I added some JavaScript. And what I need to do is I need to refresh my document. Because we are running a running live version of your app, we need to tell it to pick up the new JavaScript that has been added. So I'm going to hit refresh. And once I've done that, notice what you see here. You see body. But you see homepage container, which is the exact same item that was added in homepage.html. And when I select it, you get plenty of UI that tells you this is from a different document. You'll see that the selected content is part of homepage.html. You see the primary code editor. You'll see homepage.html displaying the markup that you saw just earlier. All right. So now let's go ahead and start building the first page of our app. The way I structured it is that the first page is very visual. It talks about a lot of the visual tools that someone might take when building an application. The second page is where some of the data binding, some of the more interesting things, if you are into the coding side of the house, will be shown. So this page can be more on the visual side, so let's go ahead and get that started. So immediately, right off the bat, I can see that the homepage container, because it's an empty element, has no height to it. So let's go ahead and fix that. So I have an ID already specified. So I'm just going to right-click on the element and say, create style rule from element ID. And you'll see this gesture quite a few times where I give an element an ID or a class value, and then I create a style rule based on it. So I'm going to create a style rule based on element ID. Once I've done that, you'll see the hashtag homepage container selector showing up here. And it's also selected for me in the applied style rules list. I'm going to switch for height and give it 100%. Once I've done that, you'll see that your application now takes up the full space available. Great. So next up, I want to display the backgrounds that were shown. And the way it is done is by using two background images that are layered. Because we support CSS3, we have a great support for the background editor that gives you all the functionality that you have with layering backgrounds and all of that, all the new things that are available in CSS, things you did not have in the past. So I'm going to add a layer. I specify it's going to be an image. And I'm going to say filmstrip.png. So by default, when you specify a background, everything is tiled, everything is just top left aligned, and all of that. And clearly, we don't want that. We want a film strip, not something that looks like a tablecloth or like a wallpaper or something like that. So I'm going to set the position Y. Actually, let me set the repeat to repeat X. I want it to repeat only horizontally. And I want to set the position Y to center. If you did not know HTML or CSS, you can sort of infer by the properties, okay, position Y might indicate that that's going to control the vertical positioning of my items. And the horizontal position might be, you know, specified by, like, let's say, repeat X or position Y. So, you know, that's an area where Blend helps you if you don't know CSS all that well. But if you know CSS, you know, you can just directly go and attack the problem without any delay. You know, that goes back to the point I made earlier about, you know, we try to help you out, but if you know the platform more, you'll be a little bit more productive. Great. So let me add another layer. So the background, that logo itself is also a background, which I also layered on top of everything else. So I'm going to go to background, specify main logo.png. And once I've done that, you'll see that it's actually appearing behind my primary film strip logo. I'm just going to move that up so it's appearing above it. And this one's going to be, I don't want to repeat at all, and I want to be centered both horizontally and vertically. Great. So that has been taken care of. The last thing that's remaining on this page is being able to actually display the picture of the chicken that you can click on. And if you remember the picture of the chicken, it actually, when you hovered over it, it changed to a different look. So how many of you here are familiar with the concept of sprites? If you did like game development or HTML development, all right, a fair number of you. And those of you who haven't, you know, you'll be like, there has to be a better way of doing this. But you know, maybe there is, but I don't know of it yet. And it's been working for the last 15 years, so you know, why change something that works? So what I'm going to do is, I'm going to add an image. I'm going to add the chicken sprite to my document. So what the sprite does is it contains all the states of the image that I actually want to show. In this case, the normal state and the hover state. And what I'm going to be doing is just, you know, playing tricks on just clipping and what is visible initially to give you the illusion of a really nice rollover effect, when in reality, all I'm doing is just shifting the image up and down. But to the viewer, to the audience, you know, as a user of the application, you're just like amazed that it works. You don't really know how it's actually done. So, you know, you have some dignity left afterwards. So I have my image. I'm just going to go ahead and, first of all, I want it to be centered vertically and horizontally. And if you ever tried centering things in HTML, you'll know that it's not the easiest of things to do, especially when you have to do with centering things vertically. So what we've done, or what the industry has done as a whole, is move to more advanced layout containers. You have your normal layout containers, but you have support for Flexbox and Grid, which give you really nice, you know, ability to position content just the way you want with very little fuss for the most part. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to show you both layout containers eventually, but I'm going to start with Flexbox right now. So the parent of my image selected, I'm going to set a display for this to be -mx-flexbox. And that's a temporary thing when it happens. By default, you know, everything gets stretched. So I'm going to go to Flexbox, some properties on it. The pack property specifies its horizontal position. The align property specifies its vertical position. So by just making three property changes, I was able to do something that was very hard to do before. But when you're dealing with application development, though, layout is very important. So a lot of investment has been made both in Blend, as well as in the runtime, as well as in the W3C, to make sure that in the future, more people can take advantage of really nice improvements to laying things out smartly. Hey, great. So I have my chicken image. I have it displayed here. Now what we need to do is just make sure you only see one part of it at any given time. So the way I'm going to do that is by wrapping this image inside a container, to a div. And I've shown you how to do it visually. I'm going to show you that all the things that we're doing, if you like to write markup manually and use the design surface as just a previewing tool, you can do that as well. So I'm going to do that by writing the div in my HTML, just, you know, by just typing it in. So I'm going to type in my div. Notice that you get, like, you know, nice IntelliSense. Going to copy the closing tag, just wrap it in here, tab it correctly, and immediately notice that in the live DOM you'll see that now between the homepage container and the image element you have the div that you had. And I'm just going to call this div, going to give an ID value, let's call it sprite container. And just like before, give an ID, let me just create a style rule based on it. And what I'm going to do is specify the height. I'm going to say it's going to be 180 pixels. And that's what you see right now. And then I want to clip the bottom part of the image. I don't want you to want to see it. So that is specified by the overflow property. I'm going to set the overflow Y to hidden. Notice once I've done that, you only see the part of the image that you really want to see initially. And all I need to do next is specify that when I hover over it, it actually changes to show the other state of the image, the part that's currently hidden right now. And for that, I'm just going to go. First, let me give my image an ID value. We call this chicken button. And I'm just going to create a style rule for this. For this one, I'm just going to type in chicken button, colon. We give you all the pseudo selectors, IntelliSense for all of that. Type in hover. And all I'm going to do is just going to make it very easy. Set the margin to be negative 180 pixels. Great. If I hit F5 right now, you'll see that it should work. See the chicken, hover over it, so you can see that. You're going to get to see the rollover effect. You know, really cool. All right, so next is page two, where a lot of interesting things happen that take you further down the path of having an application. So homepage HTML, it's mostly done. So I'm going to add some code right now first to essentially take advantage of all the stuff we've done so far and take it to the next page. But actually, before I do that, let me just create the next page. I'm going to go to a new item. I'm going to call this one, I think call it movieDisplay.html. Hit OK. And just like before, when I created homepage.html, it's an empty document, nothing really going on. So what I'm going to do is just add a div element with an ID value, just so I know exactly where the content is loaded, so I can add the child elements directly below it. So I'm going to call this movieDisplayContainer, set an ID value on it. And that's it, I'm just going to close it. OK, great. So now I'm going to go ahead and open default.js and add the remainder of my code. And I will explain what the code does. I'm not going to spend too much time actually writing it on stage. It's not too much code. But the relevant parts are this. So you saw earlier when you call homepage.html and it gets loaded, we call handedLoadedPage. And that page was initially empty. So what we do here is first start off with the event listener. When the button is clicked, and I gave an ID with a chicken button, I wanted to call the load results page. So when load results page is called, I just call the same API I used before for just loading movieDisplay.html. And that gets called, and once that page gets loaded, we call getMovieData. I will get to getMovieData shortly because that's where a lot of the information for data binding and getting your data to show up appears. But I will focus on just the movie display for right now. So I've loaded my content. I'm going to hit refresh. Great. So now, let me just make sure it works by hitting F5 again and clicking the button. All right, great. I'm assuming that, it's a clear page, so I'm assuming it is movieDisplay.html. Now, here's a challenge, one that we worked really hard to address. My application has a separate page, has a new page that's going to display content. It is called movieDisplay.html. But editing movieDisplay.html doesn't really work all that well because it doesn't really have anything beyond just the raw HTML. The assumption is, because it's an application on Windows 8, that all of its contents, all of its styling, all of its JavaScript will be loaded from default.html. And in JavaScript applications, one of the major things you'll find is that a lot of the visuals, a lot of your application state, cannot be navigated to initially. When I load the page, I see a part of my application, but a lot of the visuals, a lot of the content is actually loaded dynamically by me interacting with the application. So to address this, we came up with, in my opinion, probably my favorite feature of all, something called interactive mode. Because we're already running your application at the design time in your design surface, why don't we just go one step further and put you in a mode where clicking and selecting things in your application is not selecting it for editing, but we actually are passing the events on to the application to react to. So in this case, I'm going to click on the chicken button. I'm assuming that movieDisplay.html got loaded, and I'm going to exit interactive mode. And the best part about this now is, right now my application is not in the state it was in when I first opened it. Instead, I'm in the state that it is in after the JavaScript that I wrote here. The JavaScript that ran right here has fully run. So here you can actually see that movie display container is what is displayed. And you can see that movie display HTML is where these contents are coming from. So now I can easily design the second page of my application in the context it was actually meant to be displayed in, which is as a container inside default.html. So this is great. So just like before, I can see the height of this element is 0 pixels. I'm going to go ahead and just say create star row from element ID and just give it a height of 100%. Cool. So now that we have this page set up, the way, like I mentioned earlier, the way these contents are displayed is by using a Windows control called FlipView. And the FlipView contains a lot of functionality for allowing you to navigate between the pages, allowing you to have some nice transitions. So it's a great container, it's a great control to use for this particular application. So I'm just going to go ahead and search for FlipView. I'm just going to drag and drop it onto my design surface. And once I've done that, here's an example of where DOM really becomes, very useful, more powerful, is that your Windows control is nothing more than just like a simple div that just contains a pointer to some JavaScript library that says, this is a control. What happens is when this control actually gets instantiated, all these dynamic elements get generated for you. These are the elements that actually give you the functionality that you want. And because we have a live DOM, we make it very easy for you to be able to actually inspect the running version of the DOM, which you, if you did not have a live DOM, it'd be very difficult to see anything but just a div. And that would really greatly limit your ability to modify and make these applications work really well. So the first thing I'm going to do is the height of this container, FlipView control, is only half the page. Let's make it larger. So by default, you can see that WinFlipView has already been declared in UIDark.css. And you can actually see the tooltip says height, 400 pixels. I want to override that. And the way I'm going to do it is, I already see there's a class already specified on it, WinFlipView. So I'm going to create a style rule from the existing element class. And I'm going to create a new one. I'm just going to override the existing one. Go to WinFlipView. That gets selected. And just specify height of 100%. Because I already had height specified there, I didn't have to type it in again. And now my FlipView control is currently taking up the full size of the document. Great. So now comes the interesting part. I want to actually display some data into it. And the way the data gets loaded is reasonably straightforward. You know, I'm calling, here's my API key. Please don't use it. And and so I'm just calling an API. I'm calling the XHR method in WinJS, just make a call to the web. And I'm returning the data as JSON. And a lot of functionality has been provided for parsing the JSON. So my response variable just contains all the JSON parsed in a format that I can just iterate through and create properties out of. So what I'm doing is I'm creating a variable called MovieArray and creating three properties called title, summary, and boxArt. These are the three pieces of data that I'm really going to be using. And these names are important to remember because these names are what I'll be using to actually bind in my UI to the data that I actually care about. And the last thing I do is I wrap it onto a movie data variable. This variable is global, and I'll show you why shortly, that is bound into a list object, so I can actually get some of the functionality that the list object provides over that of a typical array. I'm just calling the process all function just to refresh my control once all this data has been added to my document. Great. So what I'm going to do now is I have my control. I'm going to HTML attributes panel. Right now, the visuals of my document and the data loaded by the control are completely independent. There's no association with it. There's no knowledge that data has been loaded by my FlipView control. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to specify the properties on it by going to the HTML attributes panel, which displays all the attributes you have on an HTML element. But if you have a control selected, also displays control properties. So the item data source property is going to contain the movie data variable that I mentioned earlier, movie data, and dot data source gives you the property that contains the data we want. I'm going to hit enter. So once I hit enter, let me zoom in a bit. You will see just some string data. You see title, summary, and all of that. And that's a good sign. It at least means that the data I had in code has been loaded inside Blend at design time. So that's crucial to remember. You know, I'm making an API call, I'm going out to the web, but for Blend, it doesn't matter. You know, as long as your application can get access to it, we can show it to you at design time. So I have my application, I have my data now. And now what I want to do is I want to style the data. And if you've ever done styling before in Blend or in other languages, in XAML or any other languages, the way you style data is by means of templates. So we have an item template property that I'm going to say, create new template. And I'm just going to call this one movie template. It's going to be identified by the ID. And what this essentially does is it creates some HTML that gets replicated and applied to every single piece of data that I have. So modifying the template is a great way for me to make sure that all of my data gets styled and displayed properly. All right, so once I create a template, we went from this long string to object. And that might seem also not very useful, but at least the nice thing is, by having it in the object format, I can actually dot into the properties, which you'll see is very, very useful in a few seconds. OK, great. So I have my object selected. And you can tell that right now the content I'm editing is part of the movie template, which I just created a few seconds ago. So what I'm going to do now is I just want to make sure that this container is large enough to contain all the content that I want. Right now, it's taking up the bare minimum amount of space needed to just show object. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to find its parent, which is div right here. And I'm going to give it a class value. I'm going to add new class. I'm going to call this one movie container. And the reason I'm creating a class value is simple. Because a template is being replicated multiple times in my document, it cannot be unique. The class value is going to be duplicated many times. And IDs are really meant for unique items. So by making a class value, I don't violate any of the well-established practices on how to define these things. And of course, the reason I'm creating a class is because I'm going to create a style rule that can modify it. So we get some shortcuts. You know, instead of having you go in and right-click again, we'll say, you're probably creating a class value to style it, so we're just going to have a checkbox here, create style rule targeting this class. Going to hit OK. So I've done that. You can see my div element now has a class value, and you can see that a style rule has been created for me as well. And just like before, I'm going to go ahead and just set the height to 100%. And I didn't do this before because all my controls had a width of 100% automatically set. I'm going to set them to 100% right now as well. Great. So 100%, you can see my object now has gone to the top left corner, which is fine for now. We'll fiddle with that shortly. OK. I'm going to go ahead and delete object for now. So what I want to do now is my application had a very distinct layout to it. It had like columns of content, had like some rows of content as well. I showed you Flexbox earlier. I'm going to show you Grid right now. So I have my container. I want to be able to specify rows and columns where I can place my content just so it is easier to work with. So just like before, the display property controls the layout method. I'm going to choose MS Grid. And once I've done that, you can now go to the grid property and grid category and specify all the properties that you want, the columns, the rows, and all of that. But you know, I am not a huge fan of typing in these things manually. When I can do it all visually, you know, when I go over the artboard, you can actually see. We give you the ability to insert rows and columns without having to actually worry about the exact syntax you need to go for them. So I'm going to create a column here. Here's where my logo will go. Here's where the box art will go. And then here's where the summary of my application will go. And then I can go ahead and here's the row that contains all of my text and all this various content. And notice that even though you see it all visually, I can see the actual values here. So if I want more precise control, I can edit it directly on the artboard, or I can just make the tweaks directly in the HTML, so in the CSS directly, and then just be able to continue on my application. Great. So I have my div. I'm just going to place some content inside it. First, let me start with the placeholder content. Let me insert my logo first. It's small logo chicken. I'm just going to insert it in here. And you're going to see me doing this repeatedly right now for this particular part of the application where I'm going to insert some content and I want to style it. So I'm going to give this a class value. I'm going to call this one small chicken logo. Create style rule targeting this class. And I want to set the grid properties on it to just be, I want it to be aligned in the center. And I want it to be vertically aligned in the center as well. Great. And next, I'm going to add the picture of our box art. Let me put a temporary logo right here. And let me give this a class value. Let's call this one box art. And create a style rule targeting this class. And I'm going to give this a height of 533 pixels. And I'm going to make sure it's like centered properly in the document as well, just like before, center and center. Actually, no, this actually wanted to be top aligned, start. And just notice what I've done so far, though. Even though it looks like I'm introducing a lot of concepts, for the most part, all I've really done since even the Hello World app is added some HTML, given an item's an ID or a class value, I just modify CSS properties on it. And the more you start using Blend, the more you get familiar with the limited number of things you need to know, the more productive you will be, because as you'll see, most of the stuff you start building in HTML are just variations of those very basic concepts that you already had. You know, it's very little that you need to essentially rethink, you know, as part of a new part of your app building. It's just modifications on existing CSS and all the HTML knowledge. Okay, great. So I have my box art. And let me just make sure that everything works fine by just saying, I'm going to go ahead and have my box art. Its source property is currently set to images temp.png. It's explicitly set to what I have here. What I wanted to do is actually display the box art from the data source that we have. And the way I'm going to do that is by setting a data binding. And if you used Blend before for data binding, this will be very familiar to you. We have this little properties peg, properties marker, to the right of your value. And you can say edit data binding. And I'm going to type in box art, which is the name of the property that I had in code. I'm going to hit box art. You will see that this page will eventually show that data. It's probably downloading in the background. So let me just go ahead and add my heading tag while that's going on. Add my heading tag. Yeah, so it's loaded. Have my heading tag here. This is where my title of my application will go. Let me give it a new class value. Call this title. Get started with targeting this class. You know, just basically rinse and repeat of the same things I've shown before. And let me just go ahead and actually get the title in first for the HTML attributes panel. Let's call this title initially. And then just go to edit data binding. Call this one title. And you'll see Argo is currently being displayed. And let me go ahead and just specify some grid values on it, just like before. Center it, center it. I keep making this mistake. It actually should be, this should be not centered. And let me, you know, I want the color to be a little different. I want the font to be different. So I want the font family on this element to be Castellar Serif. And let's make it a red color. That is almost as red as the background right there. And I misspelled Castellar, hence the reason why it is not displaying in the correct font. And likewise, I'm just quickly add the summary text just so you have the complete experience of what this application looks like. Add the div. And this div currently has zero height. You know, it's a pesky problem with divs. You know, they always tend to have zero height. So let me go ahead and give it a summary. Let me give it a height value of, let's say, 80%. Or let's make it 90%. And what I'm going to do here is load the summary text that we have. Edit data binding, summary. And notice that immediately the data has been shown. We give it to you in a yellow color just to indicate that this is actually being set by JavaScript. And the last thing I'm going to do is make this text more legible. Let me clear this out. And let me set the color to black, font size to 24 pixels. And this is good. You know, the one thing that's kind of missing is that it's scrolling off the page, which is going to be easily fixed by just setting the overflow property to just say automatic. And see, that was very quick. You know, what I had is I had some data, but very quickly, by just simply laying things out, adding class values, adding some CSS, I was able to construct my application very, you know, in a way that it was pretty much intended by my designer when I got the comps initially. Let me just see what it looks like. I'm just going to interactive mode. Let's see it. So it's currently being run. Title Argo. So this is great. You know, when I hover over it, you can see the scroll bar is now appearing. Let me go to the next page. And OK, see, something's wrong already. I see Cloud Atlas is being shown in two lines. Let's look at what that's doing. Pennsylvania, D4. OK, so let's fix this part right here. So what I noticed is that in certain cases, the text is really long. It's showing up in two pages. And you know, the reason for that is when I added my H1 tag, I did not actually specify how many columns it actually spans. So all I need to do is, you know, I have essentially one column, two column, three columns. So I have some space that I can actually take advantage of. So I'm going to go to column span and just type in 3. And once I've done that, notice that you now have your text spanning 3 columns. And that's really interesting because, you know, traditionally, if you did not have a feature like interactive mode or an ability to actually get this working, you'd have to hit F5, you know, like I'm about to do right now, navigate to the page that was causing you some difficulty, and then, you know, try to remember what style rule, what class value might have been affected, and then exit, you know, at F5, go into Blend, go into whatever tool you might have been using, and just there's this whole rinse and repeat process that was very unpredictable. And what we really tried to do is this, you know, that we felt that the most predictable, most productive thing we can do for developers in HTML is make it as predictable as possible. And this interactive mode feature is just one feature in a line of features that does that. So we have I have 12 minutes, so I'm we unfortunately not be able to talk in great detail about the next topic, but I just want to give you a teaser of what it is about. So as many of you know, building for applications involves designing for various orientations, various application layouts, and all of that. And we, you know, well, might be good for, you know, certain people to go out and buy all these kinds of devices or enlist the help of all their friends to test their application to make sure it works. It is often not the most easy way of, you know, making sure your application works across all the various, you know, states your application needs to work in. So to help with that, we have this feature called, you know, the device panel. And what the device panel does is it essentially allows you to, you know, emulate what your application looks like across all the various views, orientations, resolutions with all the scale factors and all of that. So for example, right now I'm in full screen landscape. I can go into filled, and I can see exactly what my application looks like in filled mode. I can go into snapped and see what my application looks like. I can see that this doesn't quite look good, but at least I know that I need to, you know, do some work to fix it. And likewise, I can also change the resolution. Right now, I'm right now, by default, our design surface is at 1366 by 768, which is generally the recommended minimum resolution you want. Like, for example, all your Surface devices, I believe, are at 1366 by 768. And I can actually scale it up to, let's say, 1920 by 1080 at 100% scale, which is what my laptop is running on right now. And I can see exactly what my application looks like. Notice that everything has gotten smaller. And the way you design for this is by using media queries and JavaScript. And unfortunately, I will not be able to talk about this, you know, in today's session, but there's definitely material I put online, and also my sessions I did in the past few years cover this material as well. And I can definitely, after the session's over, go into more detail for anyone who has, you know, any more content that they would like to see on this. So let me go ahead and get back to my slides. And you know, we talked about devices. I just, you know, the Surface I put in here. Like I said, tablet, laptop, TV, big screen is what is generally considered, you know, the target devices for Windows 8 applications, which means small, medium, and large screen. You need to work in landscape and portrait. If you've done phone development, that's pretty easy, you know, already done. Of course, the additional wrinkle is that your application has been full screen, they can be snapped or filled. And also you have different resolutions and DPIs. You know, we've always had this notion that, you know, as resolutions get higher and higher, things get smaller and smaller, which worked really well in a world where your mouse pointer was what you were using as your primary input device. But your fingers, you know, are not as precise as your mouse pointer. There's a physical limit before any UI you have becomes very difficult to actually click, interact with, and actually use. So what Windows does is it actually scales your UI by 40% or 80%, depending on what your device characteristics are at any given time. And Blend, the device panel I showed you, makes it very easy to be able to take advantage of that. This was a demo I was going to be showing you, but sadly, I will not be, so, you know, just stare at it for one more second. All right. Highlights, you know. So I said, I'm going to summarize it by talking about my favorite features overall. So clearly, my, you know, the first one, you know, can't go without talking about it, is that our design surface is accurate. You know, we run your HTML, CSS, and JavaScript. You know, we use the exact same rendering engine that you use when you hit F5. So we make it very predictable that what you're doing is in no way going to be off by a few pixels, or it's going to be, you know, an emulation. It's not going to be wrong. It's very predictable. You know, you're designing the live version of your app. So here's an example of it. You know, Expression Web has great support for HTML5. It's, you know, it's traditionally built for like web development, website development. And here's what a default template looks like in Expression Web. That same application open in Blend looks like that. Now, just by the sheer, you know, fact of us running JavaScript gives you that much functionality, which just shows you how JavaScript heavy all of the applications you will be building in Windows 8 are, and certainly how JavaScript heavy the controls and the templates that are provided for you are as well. Second, you know, I started by talking about this before. You know, we wanted to build an application that, you know, that creates markup they can really be proud of. You know, we create really clean and predictable HTML and CSS, and we make sure you can see it at all times as well, just to help you build trust that we are doing the right thing. Second, you know, at no point did I ever, you know, stop to say we are working with Windows controls, pause, and just like whisper that, you know, like deep voice that, you know, okay, it's all paused, it'll take a moment to say that we're working on Windows controls. It's all seamless. You know, we make working with templates, fragments, controls just a natural part of your design workflow, because if you're building your application, you know, for the most part, you don't really care that this HTML is coming from, you know, this other page, or this JavaScript is what's actually styling the pretty look of your document. You just want your application to look right, and you want to follow, you know, generally, you know, the best practice available. And we said, okay, for things that don't really matter, things that are just noise on the path for you building your application, we're going to just go ahead and make it very transparent, make it very easy for you to do. We have some UI that tells you what's going on, but we're not going to make it front and center. So, you know, we make it very seamless to work with all the advanced features that the Windows API provides for building these applications. And, you know, highlight number four is interactive mode, the feature where I was able to navigate to various states of my application within Blend, exit that state, and then continue working on my application as if, you know, nothing really happened. And that really makes it very easy to develop these applications that have lots of state, lots of visuals that are only generated by JavaScript and are only generated when my application is navigated to that particular state. And finally, you know, we have excellent integration with Visual Studio. Like I mentioned, Blend is for visual design tasks, Visual Studio is for coding and debugging. And we try to make the integration between those very seamless. You know, we share the exact same solution, exact same project files. You know, if you have TFS, for example, we support all of those functionalities between both the tools. So you get all of that functionality for free, so you can use the best tools for the task at hand. And so with that, you know, feel free to email me. I have, you know, if any questions, you know, my email is krupasi@markdaw.com. And with that, you know, we have time for questions. You know, I'm happy to answer any questions, you know, mostly helpful on stuff related to what I talked about. But, you know, I also did XAML for many years in the past as well, so I can definitely talk about that as well. So thank you. So if any questions, you know, feel free to use the microphones there. They say that, you know, speaking in the microphone there will just, like, you know, make the voice come out, the little speaker right here. I'm just curious to see how it works.
For what you just showed us, can any of that be reused to target Windows Phone?
For HTML, so what I showed you is primarily HTML development. I think Windows Phone is still Silverlight and XAML-based. So from just being able to use the markup, being able to use the CSS and styling, it will not be possible. But what you can do, though, is definitely if you had images, if you had any assets that were going to be shared between both of them, like let's say raster images, for example, that can easily be shared between all of them. But namely because, you know, if you were to use the XAML version of Blend for building your Windows 8 application, there you can, you know, be able to use a little bit more.
Is Blend ever going to have the ability to modify like SVG files? Or
that's a request we hear a lot. The question was, you know, will Blend ever get the support for modifying SVG files? It's a request we get a lot, and it's high on our list of things we're investigating for the next release. I personally would love SVG support. I mean, I agree.
Is this the version of Blend you're using that comes with the SDK and everything from the tools and so? Or do you have a special version of Blend?
Oh, no. I'm using the Blend that I downloaded from the web, the free version of the Windows 8 developer tools that are available.
Right.
Blend is installed as part of Visual Studio, so you get both Visual Studio and Blend you know, for you to use. So nothing
and
special.
And it's needed. Everything free, right?
Everything's free for Windows 8 development.
Yeah.
So you mentioned it doesn't work with Windows Phone, but what if you took that same HTML and viewed it in the phone browser?
You know, that's a general issue where, you know, let's broaden out a little bit more. Will this content here just work in a browser in general? You know, what we are creating is just normal HTML, CSS, and JavaScript with the vendor prefixes only targeted at Microsoft. So you will have to do some work to basically, you know, make your content be applicable across all the browsers. You know, you can use a library like prefix-free, for example, to help with that. But some of the JavaScript, some of the controls that we're using, for example, are actually deeply integrated with the Windows runtime itself. So they call various runtime APIs that do not exist outside of the context of Windows 8 inside the Windows 8 container that your application is running in. So even like IE10 on Windows 8 will not be able to show some of the content the way it is. So you probably have to do some work to actually, you know, move things out, comment out lines of code that are very specific to making your application work across like, you know, various orientations and all that.
Okay.
So there'll be some work you need to do. But you can definitely, you know, copy and paste HTML that you use Blend for if you use, like, you know, very generic, very common constructs and be able to use it in your website or web application without any difficulty.
Okay, thanks.
You were using the flip view control. Would this be also available in the Windows Phone development?
I don't know. I haven't played with the Windows Phone 8 SDK yet, and I think it came out, like, you know, very recently.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a flip view control exists in it, but if a flip view control does exist, you know, you can probably get similar functionality. I think they have panorama and pivot, I think, are the two main components for like navigating between them.
Okay.
You know, if someone were to write a custom control on Windows Phone in XAML and C# or whatever language of your choice is that mimic the functionality of flip view, you can easily get all of that. But you know, definitely the flip view control that exists in HTML or even in XAML might not work directly on the phone. The same reason is that, you know, a lot of API calls that are made that are very low level to give you the fluid performance and all the things that mimic a native application. So.
Okay, thanks.
So how easy would it be to use some other frameworks like jQuery, jQuery Mobile, Knockout.js, you know, and see it, run it in interactive mode?
Oh, absolutely. It's very easy. You know, I use jQuery in all of my personal app development. It works just fine. There are a few limitations you'll run into where certain, you know, for example, jQuery UI and certain other frameworks make certain calls that are like, from a security point of view are disallowed on Windows 8. You tend to be aware of that. But beyond that, any API that, you know, usually works at runtime in when you hit F5, for example, in your application, will be running in Blend. That code will execute, and you'll be able to just run your application just fine. So yeah, we're very agnostic about what API or what framework you end up using. And so I will be working the booths outside in the Visual Studio areas both tomorrow and the day after. So if you have any questions that, you know, you don't feel like emailing me about or just want to talk to me in person, you'll definitely find me or some of my colleagues who will be happy to help answer any other questions you all may have. So thank you. And do fill out your evaluations. I think I forgot to remind you guys before then.